Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
I'm Annie Warmke.
And today we're going to talk about the business of solar, or there's gold in them, there's sunbeams.
Oh my God, the things you're coming.
I know, I do. And we're joined by Michelle and Jeff Greenfield, the owners of Third Sun Solar. So welcome to the two of you.
Hello. Thanks.
Yeah, and so we want to hear all about you, all the gossip, all the how does it work to live together and work together kind of stuff. And so I was hoping you would just tell us a little bit about your background and what education got you to this point.
Yeah, sure. A lot of times folks ask me what kind of an engineering degree I have and are surprised to find out I have a political science undergrad and a master's in international development. I was in the Peace Corps overseas in Africa, and when Michelle and I went to get our grad degrees with the intention of going back over and working on international development projects. And so I guess I'm an example of you don't have to have a specialty degree to thrive in the solar business. There's a lot of my peers and friends that, again, have liberal arts backgrounds or a little of this and a little of that, and have been at the right place at the right time and pursued their passions and found success.
And I have an undergraduate degree in business, so I'm actually well-suited for my role as CEO at Third Sun. And it is from Miami University, which is an arch rival of Ohio University, apparently. And master's in international studies. Like Jeff said, we were planning on doing some international development work. After grad school here in Athens, we decided to stay and began to do economic development work here at home, which is, as many people know, this area of the state has a lot of opportunities for that. So that's where our background comes from.
That's great, because I think that's true across the industry. Lots of people, engineers, don't ever come our direction often enough. We got to work on them. They're deciding too many things without taking into account about renewables. So tell me a little bit about how your business evolved. So you ended up, you're going to go to another part of the universe and do something, and then you decided to stay. So how did that then go into, let's become solar installers and pioneers in an industry?
When we decided to stay in Athens County, we were renting a place out in the country. It's beautiful out here, rural Athens County. And we discovered there was some land for sale, and we decided to go ahead and buy it. And we bought 17 acres of land with no power to it. And so in the process of deciding where to put the house or how to build a house or what to do, we decided to build the house off-grid and not bring in the power from the power company. It was going to be really expensive to do that. And with Jeff's interest and curiosity and my curiosity also about living off the grid, we decided to do it that way. So that was the beginning in 1995, and we built the house and moved in and we're living off the grid, and many people wanted to know how we did that and how we could help them do it or help them fix what they had done before. And by 2000, it was enough. There was enough interest that Jeff decided to actually found a business.
Yeah, I was doing stuff on the weekends and the evenings while working full time, and we had young kids, and I thought, you know what? This is really what I'm passionate about. And there's the classic lucky scenario of having something that you're passionate about and that you're technically proficient at, and if people will actually pay you for it, then you can actually call that a job or a career. And it was a bit of a risky experiment, but after the first year of me doing it, probably okay, Michelle joined the team, and really things really took off from there.
Well, one of the things that we know, Jay and I know from working together and also being married, that there are challenges. And what do you think, how did you end up making that kind of negotiation and then also negotiating the ability to work together?
Well, challenges and also opportunities. So there's I would say that we're complementary. And sometimes we forget that and it's hard. Sometimes we remember it and it's great. There's a book called Rocket Fuel that talks about someone who's a visionary, who has great ideas but usually can't get anything done, and then someone else who's an integrator, who's really good at getting things done. And if you have the two of them together, you can really thrive. And, you know, we'd been doing it for a while, but when we read that book, we both nodded our heads and said, oh, yeah, that's us.
So Jeff's the visionary, and I'm the integrator. And so, yes, it sounds beautiful because we complement each other. Our employees call us, they call Jeff the balloon and me the string. So being the string can be very tiring because you're constantly having to reground and bring reality back to the balloon that, yes, that's a great idea, but right now we're doing this, and this is only how much money we have to do that. And so it's constantly a back and forth. The partnership is built on ultimate trust. I mean, as a married partnership, we do trust each other. So trusting your business partner implicitly is really a good benefit to the situation. Some challenges, though, even early on when we had the business in our house, was having boundaries between business and personal and parent time, you know, being parents and having kids. And we had to establish some very verbal, like, okay, at 7 p.m., there's no calls for the business anymore after 7 p.m. because that's family time. And then maybe it's 5 p.m. And when we got the business out of the house, that was better because we had physical separation. But we still were together, and I've learned, maybe you haven't learned.
Here we go.
That we cannot share an office. And I can't be next to an office with Jeff. We need to even have that a little bit of physical separation in the office.
Yeah, I don't think it's really unique to the solar business. We've got some friends that are, married to each other and business partners. And it's, you know, we can write a book about this. It's a pretty interesting subject
matter.
I've always
wanted to write a book about this, actually. So I think it's really interesting.
No, I agree. We could write a book about it, especially with people who are visionaries, are in those kind of really great the partnerships that fit together like fingers together, and how we make that happen. I think it is unique. I don't think most people, even friendships, are able to do that.
Well, ultimately, you have to like each other as well. That's a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, one of the things that a lot of people take for granted is, you know, Mrs. Smith comes home from her job and she says, "You wouldn't believe the kind of crap I had to deal with today." Or Mr. Smith says, "Oh man, it was a big win. Let me tell you all about it." We don't get that because we were there for it. So we miss out on that. There's a lot of things that folks that don't work with their partner or their spouse already have that they don't appreciate. So be grateful for that, everybody.
Okay, we'll take that to the courts. So
to the courts. Oh
yeah,
my gosh.
Or anywhere. I don't know where that came from. So one of the things that I was thinking about when I was thinking about this program was that lots of us as women work in male-dominated industries, whether it is business or farming or engineering. And I just wonder what you think about are the challenges for women in renewables and where you see that maybe, or where the barriers are, how you see that evolving.
So ultimately what we do in our business is a construction business. We're a contractor. And so a lot of where I see less women is in the actual trade, in the electrical, in the roof work, in actually installing panels. Now, there are women getting into that field, but I think there's a lot of opportunity for that. Going back to when we started, 20 years ago, we would go to these conferences and there were hardly any women there. Mm-hmm. And I always joke that it's great because there's never a line for the bathroom at the solar conferences. In the women's room, there is a line for the men's room. So that has definitely changed, especially as the industry has grown. It's become more mainstream. There's now, huge amounts of global capital coming into the industry. A lot of the women that started entering the industry were in that finance management kind of level of business. We do now at our headquarters in Athens have more women in the office than men. In the sale, we have in most roles we have a sales, marketing. We have a woman as an engineer now in the business.
I would call it a competitive advantage for any business, not just solar, any business anywhere, to decide that that women are people and that they're valuable. And I don't want to be.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah. Well, it's sad.
You heard it here first.
You loved your mom once. That's so good.
Well, you know, it's really sad that we even have to have this conversation today. But it's absolutely true if you look at the numbers. And it, you know, at the end of the day, most businesses, maybe you've got some special, you know, technical advantage. But most businesses are about people. If you got good people, you're going to do better. And so it's a talent war to get good people. And if you're, you know, looking at chromosomes the wrong way, you're going to miss out. And so not just our business, but a lot of our friends that we share a lot of, intel and discussion with, they agree that women are really, really, really good at a lot of things and are relatively underpaid and relatively overlooked. And so by specifically saying, let's go find women, we have a competitive advantage. I'm not just saying that because Michelle's our CEO.
or that she's in your house with you. Well, one of the things that I think is interesting, too, is the fact that women in family situations are often the deciders of how money is being spent. They control that money. They sign the check for that money and for that money to be spent. And in the solar industry, it strikes me as they also make a lot of decisions about whether that array is installed in that building or in that business. And that's interesting to me because that's how cars started out. You know, cars, when they were first being designed, they had electric engines because, well, that's what they did. And women loved that because they didn't like getting all dirty from the fuel. But unfortunately, what happened was women didn't get to make decisions about how the money was spent for the single car they were going to buy. So I think I'm just giving you a long story, but I'm just thinking that I think women have a lot of power in this industry that we haven't identified yet. And women maybe could do even better job of selling the systems if they were really talking to the women.
Well, last year, for example, our female, happens to be female, solar salesperson, solar consultants, what we call them, was top performer. And if you look back, historically was top performer, has been. So case in point. The other thing where we get to go and talk to, thousands of homeowners, a big cross-section of at least Ohio. And yes, the man might call us, but the woman is the one who holds the check and book in a lot of households.
Yep. So what do you think has been the effect that our government's tariffs have created on renewable energy policies and pricing and all of that? And what do you think's the future of that?
Well, I don't know if I can say on air.
But we aren't allowed to cuss, so just do that in your head.
Yeah. All right, well, before you jump into that, I'll go ahead and
give you a moment to give pause.
To recollect. Right? Uh-huh. So I want to remind everyone, you are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, joined today by our guests, Jeff and Michelle Greenfield, reminding you it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
And thank God.
All right. Now, Jeff, get yourself in trouble.
Well, I guess more diplomatically, the decision to put a tariff on solar modules is well behind us. And so when it hit almost 2 years ago, it was the headwinds that we didn't need. So it added, a significant amount of cost to something that we're trying to reduce the costs on. And it certainly didn't protect American jobs. Because there weren't any American jobs manufacturing solar modules at scale at the time. So at this point, the technical innovations that we've had have made up for the tariffs. But at the end of the day, it's a lost opportunity. We need the winds at our back to accelerate the shift to clean energy. And instead, we kind of put the winds in our face for a brief bit.
Yeah. And in the daily news, it seems sometimes, too, just the stuff that gets reported. Well, so what do you think is the future of all that, though? So we have a $3 a kilowatt price, And that's really...
If only. I think it's $3 a watt.
And so, oh, okay. There we go. Yeah. Okay, whatever. I'm not the solar person. I just edit the books. But you know, where do you think we are in all this? Where is it going? Where, as visionaries and pioneers, where are we going with this?
Yeah, we win. We win in the end. The question is, how long do we have to wait? And can we accelerate the shift quickly enough? I think the will of the people is clear. Both demographics on the left and the right all agree that caring for Earth is important. It's in the Bible. And they also agree that independence and making your own power is really attractive. People like that. And so I think the problem is that the politicians aren't listening to the people enough. And they are listening to campaign donors. And as we saw here in Ohio with the fight to bail out the nuclear power, it was about protecting a monopoly rather than doing what's right for the people. So that's frustrating and it's hard. But what are we going to do? We're going to keep charging forwards.
And to put some numbers to it, our business, our sales grew 45% from 2018 to 2019 amidst the tariffs, mm-hmm. amidst the anti-policies, HB6, amidst all of that. So the people on the ground, the people using electricity, making decisions, are making decisions towards more renewables. So that's where, you know, we feel very grounded in that this isn't going away, that the winds are, yes, against us, but we're persevering and people want it. So as soon as those winds start to shift, then we're going to see a bigger acceleration to continue with that sort of metaphor.
We also see that in training, you know, because we do solar installer training. And so we're seeing, you know, you can just feel it. It isn't even always something you can look at a sheet and say, well, we made more money. Yes, we did. And we had more students. And like last year, we might have had fewer students. But we can see there's this real shift just even in the last 2 months. And I just wonder what you think about training for people, because it seems to me like lots of folks are coming into the industry without training about basic solar installation and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's been hard to find. It's very hard to find people that have any experience or training, because it is such a new industry, and we're kind of used to that. So we have a lot of on the job training. There are entities out there that are doing training. I know that you guys are involved in a program.
We have an employee that graduated from Blue Rock Station's ATL
That's
certification.
Right. Uh-huh.
Your
That's
top,
right.
top employee.
Our sales manager, actually. Yeah, our director of sales. And it's needed, for sure. And we actually, under the previous governor, the two previous governors, there was more activity, I think, going on at community colleges that were training towards renewable energy. And as far as I know, and what I've seen in the last year is that that stuff has kind of dried up. I don't see it as much. So that's a shame. I mean, we're missing that. And people, like you said, I think would like to be trained for an industry that's growing, and the solar industry is growing. So
one of the other things, it's not just solar industry, but it's the trades in general. And luckily, thankfully, we're hearing more and more about this. But we're working with the Joint Vocational School, the high school, you know, that trains future plumbers and electricians and carpenters, has installed a solar lab and is training their future workforce on solar. And so we're working side by side with them on that. Jay's also involved, or Blue Rock is involved on that. So that's a harbinger of positive news. A lot of us at our age, you know, I think there's a bias that if you didn't go to college, you weren't any good.
Yeah.
And everybody had to go to college. And luckily, I think people are realizing that just like Germany, lots of very modern economies value making things. They value fixing things and keeping
trades.
Things running, the trades,
mm-hmm.
working with your hands. I think that's coming back, thank goodness, because I think that there's a lot of people that went to college begrudgingly and weren't really learning or benefiting from it, and probably would have been much happier being trained to be a solar installer and then going out there and making solar projects happen.
Or became drug addicts because they had a miserable life and they should have been using their hands.
Well, that's a leap.
There's a lot of that. Anyway, no, it's not. It's absolutely not. If you don't feel good about what you do, then you resort to other ways to do it. So next, without me getting into a sermon, I wanted to talk a little bit about what B Corporation is, because I know that you've, in the last couple of years, decided that's what you're going to be. And if you could talk about what that is and what motivated you to be involved in that.
What is a B Corporation?
B stands for benefit. So Benefit Corporation is a movement, it's now a global movement, to certify companies that have a triple bottom line focus. So not just profit, but also people and planet. So that's the triple bottom line. Companies that do activities around sustainability, around transparency, community engagement, as well as being a company that makes profit. Many people think profit is a dirty word and corporations are evil, and profit enables corporations to keep going. So if you have a corporation that's installing solar, or you have a corporation that is making recycled paper products, it's good for them to have a profit because then they can keep going. And so the B Corporation certification is like the seal of approval that you've been through the assessment process, that you've made a lot of, you've made changes in your operations and in how you do things that actually are beneficial. And I think that this came about after a lot of greenwashing was happening, where corporations were saying, yes, yes, we're sustainable. Well, let's prove it
right
by going through this
assessment.
Let's
measure it. Let's have a third-party assessment, quantify it. So one of my favorite kind of hero companies is Patagonia.
Oh, yeah.
And so Patagonia was one of the harbingers, Ben and Jerry's, and before they sold out, and a couple others were saying, hey, we're already operating our businesses for a triple bottom line, but other people are claiming it and not really doing it. So let's establish an actual scientific quantified measurement of how economically or how environmentally motivated are you? Are you walking your talk? And so that's what the B Corp standard is. And so we have a quantified score. I think we're at around 83?
82 is our score. And you can go on the B Corporation website and look at the scores. I think the average company is lower than 50. And you have to be over a certain score in order to be considered.
Is it like a 0 to 100 scale?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's a scale. So 80 and above qualifies to be a B Corp. Average North American operator is, you know, in the 50s.
52, maybe.
Or terrible, you know, negative 100.
Right.
I can point to.
Yeah, or 1,000 maybe.
Yeah. one of the taglines, you know, if you go to the B Corp website and start to investigate it, one of the taglines is using business as a force for good. And I think Michelle, you know, pointed it out, saying a lot of people think corporations are evil. And there's a lot of people that, you know, in their heart of hearts, they know that they want to see positive change in the world. They know that the current state is not how we're meant to live, and there's a lot of injustice and a lot of, you know, terrible things going on. I don't think, and a lot of folks are not waiting around for the United Nations to fix everything. And I certainly am not waiting for Washington, D.C. to fix things. And so I think that business can be a force for good. Mm-hmm. I think it's a fast way to make things happen. It's powerful, well beyond waiting around for, you know, some inspector from the city to make things happen. The power of the markets. I might be wrong, but that's where I'm betting right now, is that we're going to solve our global challenges faster and more likely to be successful if we can, you know, use B Corp movement to do that.
Yeah, and so I'm just wondering, when you decided to do this, what were some of the things that they thought you were doing really well when they assessed you?
So we did our first assessment and qualified in 2012, 8 years ago. And environmental is our biggest win, I guess, because our product is renewable energy. We produce almost 100% of our power at our office with renewable energy. We have a zero waste policy. We're not at zero waste, but we divert.
We have compost in our office. That kind of freaks out some of our guests. They're like, what is that? Well, that's our compost.
And we have some employees that don't like to take the compost out, but. So that was our big thing. governance and the way we're set up as a company, transparency, those things were also really good. We offer benefits. We offer a host of benefits to our employees. The thing though that the assessment also points out is where we can improve and gives us ideas to improve. And so that's actually, I'm working with an intern right now from the environment. She's from the business school at OU and also has environmental studies certification that she's getting. And she is diving deep into our B Corp assessment to see where it is that we can improve and where we can get big hits as far as not just to improve our score, but to actually improve our business and improve whatever the places are where we're not doing as well.
That's great.
Yeah.
So I guess the one thing that I like to ask when I do interviews is what's the best advice that you ever received? And sometimes that's hard to think about, but I think we all have that.
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of really good advice over the years. And
it didn't involve cuss words?
The advice givers might have sworn. But I can say it for the radio. At the end of the day, I want to do what I want to do. You know, I want to make an improvement in the planet, and I want to build solar arrays. And I also am very hands-on, very very directly involved. And I was doing it by myself. And the advice was, Jeff, you want to make this big impact. You want to change the world, or at least your corner of the world, you're not going to be able to do as much work by yourself. You need to learn how to work through others. You need to surround yourself with people that are better than you and delegate to them, let it go. And it's been really hard for me, just my own personality, to let people go and to trust them to do their work. But that was the biggest advice, is surround yourself with people that are smarter and better than you and work through them. And that's starting to take hold.
Well, I was going to say something like that too, but I'll try to find something else.
We should have coordinated.
Yeah.
Sorry. I took the good stuff.
Yeah.
You should have let someone else say it, Jeff.
I'm
right.
Still working on it.
I got one though. So as leaders of a business, as the CEO and president, as the owners, with a great, amazing team that works with us, working on the business is just as important as working in the business. So working in the business can sometimes be the default that we want to do. Like, I know I need to balance that checkbook, or I know I need to get out there and assist my salesperson in closing this deal. And there's room for that, but there has to be room for removal of yourself as an executive from the business to sit down and look strategically at the big picture, to be able to work on the processes, to work on the machine or the engine.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you have been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. We definitely want to thank our guests, Michelle and Jeff Greenfield, and we want to thank our producer, Adam Rich. We want to thank you for spending just a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother hopefully probably told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is?
Play nice with others, Jay. Clean up your own mess and eat those veggies.
Eat those veggies. I'll let someone else do that. All right? Till next time.
Will sing, and her children will be
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.
Yeah!